From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Despite a new call for a ceasefire from the UN Security Council, Syrian airstrikes continued Sunday to pummel the rebel-held suburbs of Damascus, known as Eastern Ghouta, where more than 500 have been killed in recent days of clashes. Video uploaded to a social media website purported to show rescuers, so-called white helmets, searching through the rubble of destroyed buildings for survivors, and images of an unresponsive child being rushed to an ambulance. Meanwhile, the opposition and monitors say a child died and several others were suffering breathing difficulties after a suspected chemical attack on the besieged rebel enclave. Paul Donahoe is with the group International Rescue Committee.
I know, speaking to colleagues inside Eastern Ghouta, that they are living in constant fear and they're worried that the next bomb might hit their home and kill their family.
The Security Council has demanded a 30-day truce. German and French leaders Sunday urged Russian President Vladimir Putin to exert maximum pressure on allies Syria for the immediate implementation of the ceasefire. At the Vatican Sunday, Pope Francis said Syria was being martyred by the incessant attacks on civilians that he described as inhuman. Turkey has welcomed the UN action but said it won't impact its own offensive in northwest Afrin region against Kurds. The Nigerian government confirmed dozens of schoolgirls were abducted last week in the northeast town of Dapchi by suspected Boko Haram insurgents. Lai Mohammed is the country's information minister.
I think there's no doubt that yes, the girls, the insurgents were actually in Dapchi on Monday evening. And as of today, we cannot account for 110 students.
President Muhammadu Buhari called the mass abduction a national disaster. This is VOA News. White House says any talks with North Korea must lead to denuclearization. The statement Sunday followed the end of the Winter Olympics in South Korea with a North Korean delegation telling President Moon Jae-in of Pyongyang's willingness to meet with the U.S. But Tufts University Korean Studies Associate Professor Sung-Yoon Lee said the two sides want to discuss different issues.
The crux of the matter, the problem is North Korea wants to talk about disarmament, mutual disarmament, and peace treaty, getting the U.S. out of South Korea. The U.S. wants to talk about denuclearization.
South Korea Monday said it hopes for constructive talks that can be held between the North and the U.S. Friday, Washington imposed another large package of sanctions, a move Pyongyang criticized as provoking a confrontation. Chinese state-run media announced Sunday a proposal to remove the constitutional clause that limits a president to two terms in office. Xi Jinping will be formally elected to a second term March 5 during the annual meeting of the country's parliament. The announcement was met with criticism on social media, prompting the Weibo social media platform to remove the comments. In Britain, an explosion Sunday that destroyed a store and home in central city of Leicester injured half a dozen people.
Heard a low explosion, then felt a tremendous shock through the house. It felt like it was going to bring the ceiling down.
That's resident John Alexander, who lives near the blast site. Police said there was no immediate indication the blast was linked to terrorism. A powerful earthquake measuring 7.5 magnitude struck early Monday the South Highlands of Papua New Guinea, with reports that the oil and gas operations of ExxonMobil and Explorer Oil Search have been disrupted. The quake struck near the center of the country's main island, about 560 kilometers from the capital of Port Moresby. There was no risk of a tsunami, and there were no immediate reports of casualties. The seventh round of talks on revising the 24-year-old North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, got underway Sunday in Mexico City with the main U.S. demands still unresolved. President Donald Trump wants the agreement with Mexico and Canada to be renegotiated to reduce the U.S. trade imbalance and preserve U.S. jobs. 6 months of talks have yielded some progress. The talks are scheduled to continue through March 5. The White House Sunday said President Donald Trump will attend the funeral of the late American Protestant evangelist Billy Graham, who died last week at age 99. The funeral is to take place on the grounds of the Billy Graham Library March 2nd in Charlotte, North Carolina. Graham is also being afforded a rare tribute lying in repose in the U.S. Capitol Rotunda in Washington Wednesday and Thursday. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Everybody, Africa, welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, February 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. At least two people were killed in Sunday's anti-Kabila protest in the DRC.
One person was killed in Kinshasa in the church called Saint-Benoît. Another person was killed in Mbandaka, making it a total of two. But many people were wounded and also many arrested.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition known as the Rassemblement. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa says he will do more for the country if given enough time. Cameroon deploys more troops to fight armed separatists in the country's English-speaking regions. And South Sudan responds to a UN report criticizing human rights abuses in the country.
The South Sudan law allows freedom of expression within the law. There is no way where you are allowed to express your opinion and you begin to step on the toes of others. The rights of others are protected within the law.
For South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay, Nigeria says 110 girls are still unaccounted for from last week's Boko Haram attack on a college in Yobe State. And Liberian President George Weah issues an ultimatum for former officials to return all government vehicles. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A member of the main opposition coalition in the Democratic Republic of Congo, known as the Rassemblement, says at least two people were killed in Sunday's anti-Kabila protest in the country. Martin Fayulu also says several people were arrested and many wounded when security forces shot live ammunition and tear gas at protesters. The Roman Catholic Church called Sunday's protest to demand that President Joseph Kabila step down. The DRC government was not immediately available for comment, but Information Minister Lambert Mende told VOA recently the church was becoming political. The DRC's long-delayed elections are supposed to take place at the end of this year. But Fayulu says the Rassemblement wants a transitional government without President Joseph Kabila that will organize credible and transparent elections.
I was in the church with one lady. She was wounded last time. But this morning she came again and we were together. This is what the demonstration means. Mr. Kabila is not accepted in Congo. People were there. But the only thing is his police and his military people, they are ready to kill. The priest said that today, the objective was zero dead, but we still have two. This is the problem. But the good thing with Congolese now, everybody has realized that Kabila is a bottleneck and he should go.
One report we have here says that one person was killed. Is that true?
Yes, one person was killed in Kinshasa in the church called Saint-Benoît. But another person was killed in Mbandaka, making it a total of two now. But many people were wounded and also many arrested. People in Bandunduville, in many areas, wounded people and the arrested people. But for now, what we know that there are two people that passed away.
President Kabila has agreed to hold elections this year. So one would say, why the protest? Is the church or you the opposition? Are you trying to provoke the government?
We are provoking the rally and the protest because we want the fair and the credible election. Mr. Kabila is not capable to organize a transparent election in Congo. He has to go. That's what we are saying to all people. How can you hold elections where people cannot demonstrate? Where people cannot have a meeting. Mr. Kabila wants to tour the country himself, he and his people, but we cannot tour the country. We have many friend politicians who are today in prison. They have to get out of the prison. We have Congolese who are in exile. And what you are talking about, how can somebody can say that I want election, but he wants election for himself, he wants election, he is free, but others are not free, cannot talk, cannot describe what they want.
Mr. Fayulu, the last time a church called a nationwide protest, people died. Now you are telling us that there were people who were killed. What's next? Do you intend to continue protesting?
We will continue to pressurize them. We will continue to rally. We will continue to tell the whole world that we need election, the credible election. But for that, we need a transitional government without Mr. Kabila, because he is a bottleneck for the electoral process. Mr. Kabila has a key mission. That mission is to destabilize Congo. Mr. Kabila is buying land all over the country, he and his family. To do what with that? What, he wants to keep people outside and to bring them in Congo? This is the plan of Mr. Kabila. We cannot accept that.
Martin Fayulu is the member of the main opposition coalition in the Democratic Republic of Congo, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The South Sudan government says its laws protect all fundamental human rights, including freedom of expression. But Information Minister Michael Makui says the government will not allow individuals to trample over the rights of others. Makui was responding to a UN Commission on Human Rights report which warns of undue restrictions on freedom of expression in South Sudan, saying some of the violations may amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. And Makui says South Sudan does not conform to any other country's laws but its own, and that anyone who comes to South Sudan must respect South Sudan laws.
The restriction is according to the law. The South Sudan law allows freedom of expression within the law. There is no way where you are allowed to express your opinion and you begin to step on the toes of others. The rights of others are protected within the law. So anybody who exercises their right of expression and freedom of press or whatever freedoms, these freedoms must be exercised according to the law. And anybody who goes beyond the law and he steps on the toes of others must answer. This is what our law says, and this is what we are doing. We are not here to conform to any other's laws, but to the laws of the Republic of South Sudan.
The report identifies, it says, 60 verified incidents which violate the legitimate right to freedom of expression of 102 victims, including 17 women, in the period from July 2016 to December 2017. It mentioned that 58 people were detained and others, 16 people dismissed from their jobs, the closure or suspension of 3 media houses. Are you saying all these people violated the law?
All these people, whatever action taken by the media authority is in accordance with the provisions of the law. And by the way, for your information, there are some people who believe that they need to decide whether to recognize or not to recognize laws of certain countries and states, member states of the UN. These are our laws, and anybody who comes to South Sudan is duty-bound to respect and abide by the laws of the Republic of South Sudan.
UN South Sudan mission over sex abuse. Does your government know about this thing happening, and what's your reaction?
Well, of course, the fact that these people are employees of the UN or representatives of the UN and they have the immunity, within the limits of performance of their functions and duties. This immunity does not extend to protecting them when they are in conflict with the law of the nation. It does not allow them to violate the laws of the nation and commit atrocities, and they continue to be protected because they are employees of the UN or because they are UN employees. That is not acceptable. It is only when they violate, when they are in conflict with the law, in the performance of their official functions and duties, that they are protected. But when they behave in their personal capacity, when they begin to abuse the immunity given to them, then ultimately this is outside the law and they must answer in accordance with the laws of the state in which they are operating.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe was speaking with us from the capital, Juba. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Monday, February 26th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa says he wants more time to be able to adequately address the country's economic problems. As Sebastian Mofu reports for VOA from Harare, Mnangagwa took over from President Robert Mugabe in November last year and is a few days removed from his first 100 days.
Late Sunday, ahead of his 100 days in office this week, President Emmerson Mnangagwa said he has done more than what his predecessor, Robert Mugabe, did in 37 years. The 75-year-old Mnangagwa said he could still make Zimbabwe a better place if he gets more time at the helm.
We must, of course, be realistic and recognize that it takes more than 100 days to recover an economy. I know there are those among you who are frustrated at the pace of change, and I understand that. But let me assure you that though we have had some major achievements, this is just the beginning. After 100 days of action, we are on the right path.
But independent analyst Rejoice Ngwenya says it has not been all rosy since President Emmerson Mnangagwa took over last November.
There has been a tendency of a militarization of institutions, of public institutions and institutions of governance. And that to me is a problem. It will be very difficult for him to deliver the promise of free and fair election. So on a scale of 1 to 10, I would give the first 100 days of the ED Mnangagwa government 4 out of 10.
Zimbabwe is expected to hold elections around mid-year. It remains to be seen if Mnangagwa, who came to power last November after the army forced founding President Robert Mugabe to resign, would make good his promise to reform the country if elected into power again. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Nigeria's Minister of Information says its government is optimistic its military will be able to recover 110 schoolgirls who are still unaccounted for following last week's Boko Haram attack on a college in Yobe State. Lyle Mohammed says there is no contradiction between the government's claims of military successes against Boko Haram and the missing girls. This, as the Nigerian government has yet to free all 200 Chibok girls abducted by Boko Haram in 2014. Mohammed says terrorism is a global phenomenon and it would be very uncharitable to suggest that the government of President Muhammadu Buhari is losing the war against Boko Haram.
To work today at Damakru, and we had a very useful meeting with all the various stakeholders, the state government led by the governor himself, agencies of the parents, traditional rulers, the army commanders, the police, the civil defense. And the idea was to get an update on the developments. You recall that we were actually in Dapchi on Thursday, myself and the Honorable Minister of State for Foreign Affairs. And we are quite encouraged by the outcome of the meeting of today because the synergy between all the various actors, the military is taking and getting very useful tips from the local people. The state government is cooperating and we are very confident that, I'm very optimistic that we will recover the girls.
Lau, it was just last week I spoke to the commander of the operation against Boko Haram. And he spoke so highly about the success that the military was making. How do you expect the Nigerian people to interpret this?
Well, I think there's no contradiction at all between what the commander of the Lafi Adole said and what the unfortunate incident. Because the Lafi Adole, which is the commander of the Boko Haram anti-insurgency, done extremely well. And today, the Sambisa Forest, which used to be the sanctuary of Boko Haram, has been leveled to the ground. I think it's also, in a manner, the success of the commander in dislodging the insurgents from Sambisa Forest that led to the fleeing, inflicting this cowardly attack at very soft targets.
Your government still has not accounted for all of the Chibok girls. On top of that, you have this. It seems that instead of you winning the war, the rebels are getting the best of your government.
Well, that might be a very uncomfortable way to put it, because terrorism is a global phenomenon. And I think it would be very uncharitable to say that a government that has been able to put the Boko Haram on the run, a government that has decimated Boko Haram, a government that has dislodged Boko Haram from sanctuary, a government that has driven Boko Haram from 20 out of 27 local governments in Borno State alone, I think it is very uncharitable to say because of this unfortunate incident that the rebels are having an upper hand.
Does your government know what type of schools that the Boko Haram seems to be attacking, or do they pick any school?
Well, we have today directed that security at all schools should be reinforced, and we have directed that police and civil defense should show more presence. You see, the thing about fighting insurgency is that you cannot have every school covered, but we're trying our best.
Nigeria's Information Minister Lai Mohammed was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Cameroon has deployed more troops in its English-speaking regions after another wave of attacks on public buildings and the kidnapping of military and government officials by suspected armed separatists. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
A Cameroon military band plays as hundreds of their colleagues are deployed to the troubled English-speaking regions of the Central African state. Defense Minister Joseph Betty Asomo says they should be very professional in executing their duties.
Ce que je puis dire, c'est que le moral des troupes est bon. Il est très bon, malgré les pertes.
He says although many soldiers have been killed, the military remains determined to fight and defeat armed separatists who are bent on destroying Cameroon. He says the troops are out to ensure security, public order, and the respect of state institutions. Asomo did not give the total number of government troops in the English-speaking regions, but local media says there are thousands. Asomo says the troops were deployed following repeated attacks on government officials, public buildings and schools by suspected armed separatists fighting for what they call the independence of the English from the French-speaking regions of Cameroon. Cameroon's government says at least 30 soldiers have been killed since armed attacks began in November. Several government officials and soldiers have been kidnapped and their whereabouts are not known. Traditional ruler Nangea Mbili from the southwestern town of Mundemba says the population is awaiting the arrival of the troops.
The southwest has suffered so much. It is on our land that you have the greatest victims.
I expect that they will do all they can to make sure he's found alive.
Mbili, however, says the military should not illegally search homes and indiscriminately arrest people suspected of belonging to the resistance group, has been the case. Cameroon President Paul Biya declared war on the separatists last November. The unrest began when English-speaking teachers and lawyers in the northwest and southwest regions, frustrated with having to work in French, took to the streets calling for reforms and greater autonomy. It degenerated with separatist calls for independence. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Liberian President George Weah has given a 2-week ultimatum for former officials from the Ellen Johnson Sirleaf government to return all government vehicles still in their possession. Weah accused the officials of either damaging the vehicles or stealing them. Speaking Friday on his return from Paris, France, Weah said the former officials must return the vehicles or the government will come to get them. Information Minister Eugene Nambwe says while President Weah does not wish to witch hunt any individual, he will enforce the laws of the land if and when necessary.
The reason why the president gave the order is because we have realized that some officials of the past government are still in possession of government vehicles. Some individuals who perhaps are not officials are also in possession of some government properties. So this is just a period that the president is giving so that people who have not turned in the government-owned properties can do so now. Further to that, the full effect of the law will come into play. So what he has done is to just give people an opportunity to come in now if you still have a government property to hand them in over to the General Services Agency.
Mr. Nambwe, is it part of what people, some of the critics are saying, that not enough thought went into the changeover? That is, the government should have known that it needed these vehicles because that's how the government operates. How come it gets to this level?
Well, it's because people don't want to follow the law. Because even during the transitional period, you know, all officials of government were asked by the former president to turn in their vehicles. Some of them did. In fact, most of them did. But there are still a few stragglers who are keeping government property. It is this group of people now that this new order by President Weah is targeting, and he's giving them an opportunity to come in now and hand in all government properties that are in their possession.
I read a quotation where the president seems to be concerned more about how people view him or his administration, saying here that he doesn't want to be seen as carrying on a witch hunt. He should govern the country instead of worrying about people thinking that he's witch hunting.
Well, a witch hunt is not a proper way to govern. So he's right. He's not in for a witch hunt. All he's trying to do is to ensure that we follow the rules, we follow the laws, and he will remain a president who will not wish on anybody. A wish on is a terrible thing. That does not mean that he's not going to implement the rules and follow the laws of our country. He has taken an oath to follow our constitution and all of our subsidiary laws, and this is what he's doing.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the CAF Super Cup, where CAF Champions League holders Wydad Casablanca won the African Super Cup title after beating DR Congo giant TP Mazembe 1-0 with a late strike at the Stade Mohammed V on Saturday. It's the first African Super Cup title in the history of Wydad Casablanca, who beat Al Ahly in Champions League final last year to win their maiden Champions League crown. TP Mazembe Confederations Cup holders won the Super Cup 3 times. And on to women's football. Ghana's Black Queens have been crowned the champions of the maiden edition of the WAFU Zone B Women's Tournament after beating host Cote d'Ivoire 1-0 in the final game at the weekend. Nigeria's Super Falcons earlier claimed third place with a 2-1 win over Mali. Newly appointed Bayana coach Desiree Ellis aims to start her new job on a high by leaving a lasting impression on the Cyprus Women's Cup. South Africa are aiming for their best ever finish at the annual event. This will be the sixth time Bayana will be taking part in the tournament against a highly ranked opposition.
Going to any tournament, going to any game, you want to win it, and we are no different. So we'll take it game by game, but the idea is to go out and win the games and then play off for the best position that we can, but you have to win all your games.
In other sports news, the curtain finally fell on the 2018 Winter Olympic Games in Pyeongchang on Sunday, but the games will be remembered for Nigeria's Winter Olympics adventure, mainly driven by an all-female bobsled team who became the first ever Africans to participate in bobsled at the Winter Olympics. The Nigerian bobsled team didn't bring home the gold, but they didn't leave the 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang empty-handed. Sheung Adigun, one of the athletes, said though they finished in the 20th place out of 20, they have all reasons for further celebration.
What we've done has set the groundwork for how people will now get into the sport, and it has started a wave, literally, since before we even got to this point. The inquiries that were coming in, the interest of people from not only homegrown within Nigeria, but within the diaspora that are now encouraged to do something all over the world, from Africa, from everywhere. So we're really, really excited about the outlook that this year has set for everyone else.
Staying with athletics news, Kenya's Dickson Chumba cruised to victory in the 2018 Tokyo Marathon, cutting the tape in a time of 2 hours, 5 minutes, 30 seconds to win the men's race in the Japanese capital. The women's race was won by Ethiopia's Brihene Dibaba, who timed 2 hours, 19 minutes, 51 seconds, with Hella Kiprop, the best Kenyan finisher, in 5th place. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
And that's it for this Monday, February 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Ethiopia is set to undergo a major political change following the unexpected resignation of Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn. The nation is now under a six-month state of emergency, as declared by the defense minister, but the U.S. State Department says it strongly disagrees with a call to declare a state of emergency. A discussion on Ethiopia.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.